Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for joining us this week for another edition of On DOD. In this edition of the program, we'll hear from the Commanding General of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the Army's Chief of Engineers, Lieutenant General Thomas Bostic. That organization, like the rest of DOD, is in a period of transition as budget numbers decline and the military draws down from more than a dozen years of war, including a lot of new construction. The program you're about to hear is made up of excerpts of a recent media roundtable Bostic hosted for myself and a few other reporters at the Pentagon. It begins the discussion with an introduction to the Army Corps of Engineers itself and some of its current challenges.
We have about 36,500 great employees in the Corps of Engineers, mostly civilian. About 700 of those 36,500 wear the uniform in our military leaders. Our capability in engineering and scientific expertise is broad and it's deep, and much of that capability is dedicated to infrastructure development and sustainment. About two-thirds of our USACE budget is for military programs, and we expect to see continued reductions as funding for these programs returns to pre-9/11 levels by the end of the decade. We received about $20 billion in fiscal year 14. Although the president has not released the budget to Congress, I expect the military budget for infrastructure will decrease for fiscal year 15 due to many demands on DOD and limited resources. Over the past decade, we've executed an extraordinarily large military program of almost $30 billion at its peak in 2008. And this includes the National Base Realignment and Closure Program, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act work, and support to Iraq and Afghanistan. In addition to that, we executed other large programs such as the Katrina recovery effort at about $14 billion in our Civil Works program. With our industry partners, we achieved superb results to meet the needs of the nation. Our challenge today is to adjust our organization to anticipated program reductions across the POM while retaining the capability to provide engineering solutions to the nation's continuing and substantial needs. We remain very capable and engaged to serve the nation. The Army Corps of Engineers provides a major contribution to ensure U.S. forces and our allies are trained and ready in Afghanistan and other overseas locations. For example, we're managing a construction program of about 1,000 projects in Afghanistan valued at over $10.8 billion since 2002. To date, we've completed approximately 750 projects valued at $9.1 billion, and we currently have 250 projects valued at $1.7 billion remaining. And by December 14, we expect to have 45 projects valued at approximately $300 million remaining to close out the Afghanistan construction program. Our research and development labs have also helped to develop technology directly relevant to supporting our troops, such as defense against IEDs and microgrid technology. The ability to identify IEDs and provide more fuel-efficient power systems reduces dangerous road trips and soldiers' exposure to IEDs. We also design and build facilities wherever our service members and family members work, train, and live, including locations like Korea and Japan, where we're helping the design and construction with host nations for their facilities, such as in the Republic of Korea, where over $10 billion of construction is going into the consolidation of U.S. forces on Camp Humphreys to move them out of downtown Seoul and in northern bases to Camp Humphreys. This will provide modern facilities for our soldiers and allow many more families to accompany service members to Korea. The government of Japan is also planning and programming replacement facilities for U.S. forces valued at several billion dollars. We're also responsible for the management and design and construction of the U.S. Army, Air Force, and defense agencies to include development of state-of-the-art complexes for 21st century schools in the Department of Defense Education Activity and world-class medical facilities for the Defense Health Agency. We also support the nation and the Army in achieving energy security and sustainability goals. We have awarded more than 35 energy savings performance contracts, which provide private sector financing to implement energy infrastructure improvements on government facilities for energy saving and reduced costs. Our leadership in these areas is important to the nation and was recently illustrated at a White House ceremony where three U.S. Army Corps of Engineers were recognized as winners of the 2013 GreenGov Awards for their work in promoting sustainability. They included Jeanette Feiss of our Northwestern Division, who won the Sustainability Hero Award for initiatives to reduce energy use in our facilities, and Dr. Kathleen White of the Institute of Water Resources and Mark Huber of the Army Geospatial Center, who are part of an interagency team that won the Climate Champion Award for developing a method to assess impacts of sea level rise. The GreenGov Presidential Awards honor exceptional federal personnel that exemplify President Obama's charge to lead by example in sustainability.
General, just going back to your comments about the need to reshape your organization across the POM, can you spend a little bit more time on the workforce aspects of that reshaping? You know, what are some of the considerations you're working through, particularly considering some of the demographic imbalances that you've talked about before?
Yes. Well, there are several ways we're looking at reshaping the organization. First, we're in line with the SecDef's guidance and the SecArmy's guidance for a strict percent reduction of 25% from the Secretary of the Army and the Chief Staff of the Army. So all two-star headquarters and above are looking at a 25% reduction in our staffs. We've decided that we're not going to salami slice that. We're going to relook our organization, the roles and missions, functions of each of the staffs and each of the levels of command, and reshape the organization to meet the objectives of USACE with the resources that we're going to have with the 25% reduction. So it's not going to be a salami slice. It'll be a roles and mission function assessment. That's the first goal. Longer term, we're also looking at how we address the nation's requirements in different areas of our command. Currently, we have two major areas in the command, two major directorates, and that's military missions and our civil works. And within military missions, there are three primary areas where they're focused. One is to support the combatant commanders in the work that we have to do in 132 countries where we're currently operating. Secondly is in support of the installation management community and what we do on installations, not only for the Army, but for the Air Force and other agencies. And third, what we do in energy security and sustainability goals. Along with our combatant commanders, that first area, there's also a broad interagency requirement to support the VA, Department of Energy, USAID. Some of those areas missions are increasing and some are decreasing. We were just in a meeting yesterday with the VA. We're working very closely with Department of Energy. USAID has always had a strong partnership with us in terms of the work that we execute. So how we reshape the future of military missions is going to be a function of what outputs we have to produce. I think there are going to be more outputs required in the interagency, for example, than we have experienced in the past. In times of fiscal challenge, which we are facing now, all organizations must focus on their core competencies. They must execute their core competencies very well. Our core competency is solving the nation's toughest challenges, and that involves our military missions and our civil works, and predominantly in design and construction. Organizations that may not have that as a core competency, but are involved in those types of functions now, we already feel they are leaning to the core for assistance. And we have to be structured and organized to accept that. And one of the areas is in the interagency where we're working with our partners in VA, DOE, Customs and Borders, USAID, and the State Department to help with that area that may not be their core competency, and to be a partner in that effort. So that's on the military mission side. How do we reshape, restructure? On the civil works side, we're going through what we call civil works transformation. And in the civil works transformation, we're looking at how do we better budget, how do we better plan, how do we look at our infrastructure strategy as we move forward. So those are critical areas that as we move forward in those areas, the question is, are we properly structured? So the Department of the Army is going through a functional area review. We're doing a very similar analysis within the headquarters to ensure that that we're structured properly at both the headquarters USACE level and at the division level.
And when it comes to that initial 25% reduction you mentioned, have you planned that out both in the timing of that and I guess the method, meaning are you going to pursue reductions in force potentially or more voluntary things like early retirement incentives or separation payouts?
Well, if you look at our organization, about 40% of our organization has been around for 20 years or more. About 40% 5 years, 5 to 8 years or less, and 20% is in the middle. So we have a clear challenge in terms of making sure we retain the talent that we have, continue to recruit through our intern program, and carefully allow our retirements to move on without losing too much talent in the middle, because we're already short in terms of that population in the middle. So my sense is that we have been very judicious in terms of hiring, and we've been very judicious in terms of filling all of our authorized positions. So we're taking a hard look at those authorized positions that we have not filled and asking the tough questions today, do we need to fill them under this environment? So some of that will help with the 25% reduction. There will be some that choose to retire. Like I said, there are many that we're in that could retire today or retire in the next several years. And I think our challenge is going to be to meter that so that we have the talent that we need going forward. And then as a last resort, we would look at a RIF. I believe that this 25% cut, which is we'll execute between now and the next in our organization, I think we can absorb it in the next several years. So it's not going to be something that we do this year.
And just to clarify, is that 25%, is that organization-wide across the Army Corps of Engineers or just
it's at the headquarters level? The headquarters level. The guidance from the Army and from DOD was two-star headquarters level and above. I will work to absorb most of that in our headquarters, but there will be some reductions in authorizations at our two-star level, I would imagine. But we're in the middle of kind of that negotiation and study. In fact, I just had all the leaders in the headquarters for about a week, and this was the topic of discussion. And we went through each of the areas that we're analyzing to get input from our commanders and our senior executive service leaders to get their views. So that was the initial session that we had. And we're going to work between now and August to come to some key decisions that we'll have to make in this next year and the following years.
Lieutenant General Thomas Bostic is the commanding general of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Hearing excerpts from a media roundtable he held recently at the Pentagon with myself and a few other reporters. More with the general after a short break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, I'm Jared Serbu. This is On DoD. We're hearing this week from the leader of the Army Corps of Engineers, Lieutenant General Thomas Bostic. Formatically, this week's show is a little bit different than usual. Rather than a one-on-one interview like we usually do, we're hearing a media roundtable General Bostic held recently at the Pentagon with myself and a handful of other reporters. Since our microphones were not able to get terribly good sound from the reporters in the room besides myself, I'm going to paraphrase most of my colleagues' questions. Here, Bostic responds to a question about DoD's proposal for another round of base realignments and closures and how another BRAC, or lack thereof, would impact the Corps.
First, we're supportive. We believe there's going to be another BRAC, and we're looking at 17. I think most of the leaders inside the building that believe there's going to be another BRAC, and you know, certainly Congress will make the call on this, but 17 is kind of the time frame that we're looking. It will be a very different BRAC for the Corps of Engineers. The last BRAC for the Corps of Engineers resulted in about a little over $11 billion worth of construction. We started in 2006, we finished in 2011, and we were able to complete the missions that we were assigned on time to a high quality and mostly under budget. And I think one of the important lessons there for many that look at the Corps, and I wouldn't say it's many, but some that look at the Corps and feel we take too long, cost too much, and don't deliver some of these projects that they're looking for. Some of that is true because the money comes in drips and drabs. On the civil works side, for example, we have $60 billion worth of projects that have been authorized. And every year we have about $1.5 billion to address those issues. So obviously you're not going to finish too many projects on time and under budget. So what we saw, the beauty of BRAC, this last BRAC, is all of that upfront funding was there. And we were able to work with the contractors. They knew how to bid. They knew that the money was going to be available. And they did a marvelous job. But when you think about where the Army was, you know, 570,000 in the active force, and we're going down to 490,000, and some discussions based on, you know, what happens with sequestration and otherwise. But just to come down to 490,000, we can't possibly keep all of the square footage that we have. So much of the next BRAC will be focused on how do we reshape installations, what changes in the overall location of installations in order to retain a force that is much smaller than the force we have today. But right now we're going to largely retain, except for those places where we can knock down buildings, and we have done some demolition of buildings. But at some point, that's not cost-effective to just demolish a certain number of buildings while you have a much smaller force on there. And I think the discussions, the tough decisions about which installations remain, which might go away, I think that's going to be more of what this BRAC is about, and not as much movement. We moved three four-star headquarters and multiple three-star headquarters. Built a new ForceCom headquarters, built a new AMC headquarters, built a new TRADOC, multiple hospitals, 7-8 hospitals. So the Corps was heavily involved planning, design, and construction. In this one, there will be some of that, but the focus will be on how do we reshape where the Army is, on what installations, and then how do we dispose of some of that square footage that is very expensive to maintain and operate.
That's Lieutenant General Thomas Bostic, the commanding general of the Army Corps of Engineers. Paraphrasing the next question, our microphones weren't able to pick up at this recent media roundtable. What are the Army Corps' biggest challenges in Afghanistan as the U.S. winds down its presence there?
Well, like I said in my opening remarks, we've done a tremendous amount of work in Afghanistan, and when you look at what is remaining, about $1.7 billion worth of work, 250 projects. The challenge is completing all of that work in the time that we have. There is no question, as I pointed out, that the Corps of Engineers will be there beyond December of 14. We're still in Iraq, working with the embassy and working on foreign military sales projects. So my sensing is, barring any guidance, that the typical way that the Corps would operate is that we would not rely on some of the security that we have today, which is both from the soldiers, the combat forces, and from security, civilian contract security companies, but we would rely on the quality assurance of the Afghans, their engineers, to perform the quality assurance in these remote locations where we will still have projects ongoing, and making sure that they are protected and they are competent in order to do the work that they need to do. We have about 400 what we call QAs that we feel very confident, quality assurance engineers that are Afghans that can go into some of the remote locations where U.S. Corps of Engineer employees cannot go. That being said, there are some very, very important projects that require our expertise to be on the ground, and our focus right now is on those high-priority projects which require U.S. technical expertise, especially when it comes to electricity and those sorts of areas, to send our experts in and make sure that the construction is done to a high standard, high quality, and to do that at a fairly rapid pace. And as you know, much of the U.S. forces, the combat forces, they start to draw down towards December 14, in whatever residual force will remain. There will not be the kind of forces we don't suspect that will be able to help on some of these outlying projects that are far away. So that's one of the main challenges, is to make sure we can accomplish our mission with the security forces that we have, and to do it at a very high standard. I think next to that is making sure that the projects that are completed, that the Afghans can maintain and operate them. And we have constructed these projects with the thought in mind that they're not going to be operated in New York City. They're not going to be operated in Peoria, Illinois. They're going to be operated and maintained in Afghanistan by the people of Afghanistan and using their culture. So a lot of the bells and whistles that you might find on a barracks facility or in a maintenance facility or in a cafeteria, we can't expect some of those same types of facilities to be the kind you would find in the U.S.
Lieutenant General Thomas Bostic is the commanding general of the Army Corps of Engineers. More on the Army Corps after another quick break. This is On DoD on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin.
Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Back on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. The status and current challenges of the Army Corps of Engineers is our topic this week. We're bringing you excerpts of a recent media roundtable with that organization's leader, Lieutenant General Thomas Bostic, the commanding general of the Corps and the Army's chief of engineers. This is from a recent media roundtable he held with me and a few other reporters at the Pentagon. Again, my other media colleagues were too far away from our microphones to make for decent broadcast quality, so I'm repeating and paraphrasing some of those, such as this one from a reporter who asked how much equipment the Army would try to bring back from Afghanistan and how much would be left behind for use by the Afghan government.
Let me start off with kind of the latter part of your question. We are doing about $4 billion worth of work that is supporting the Afghanistan National Security Forces. And those are engineers, they're infantry, they're all of their forces that provide the kind of security. And those facilities include everything from barracks to maintenance areas and equipment. My area is the commanding general of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Most of my team that's over there are civilians. So the kind of work that they're doing is design and construction, and the people that are doing the construction are contractors. Most of them, we try to use local contractors that are from Afghanistan. There are some from Turkey, and there are some from other countries around the world, including the U.S. But my force, if you will, is a civilian force that does the construction. So I don't have a lot of personal equipment other than laptops and the things that would allow our people to operate over there. On the combat side, I know what is going on is to bring back those things that we absolutely need for the 490,000 man force that will be in the United States and around the world, and to make sure that the equipment that we absolutely need is returned. And some of that is going to come through the G-lock. Some of it's going to come through a place we fixed called the Salong Tunnel. Some of it's going to be flown out by C-17s. Very, very challenging as compared to bringing this equipment out of Iraq. So I know the logisticians and the operators that are planning this are being very judicious in what they bring out, how they bring it out, and where it's located. I know a good amount of it will come back to the installations where our soldiers are training here in the U.S. and other locations around the world. And then some of it may go in pre-position stocks. I know that we're looking at that. But I think a large amount that is not absolutely essential or that can be transitioned to the Afghanistan National Security Forces will remain. I mean, if there is not a GSA, and unless we are directed otherwise, I suspect that there will be some sort of embassy, just like we have in Afghanistan or in Iraq, and that through the State Department we would execute, and whatever residual military is there, we would execute our mission using these quality assurance engineers that are Afghans. And then we would have a smaller footprint of U.S. civilians from the Corps of Engineers and some military that would guide the remainder of the construction program. So, yes, I envision that we will be there in some form after December 14, whether or not there is a SOFA or GSA, but that's, you know, there are other people that have to determine that. We will take our orders from our leaders, both military and civilian, but given what we've seen, at least in other places that we've been, including Iraq, my sense is, at least from a foreign military sales point of view, we will be there in some form or fashion. You know, these are critical projects that we will be working on for a time period beyond 14. Things like the Dala Dam and other key infrastructure, electricity projects, both in the northern and the southern electricity power line projects. These will not be finished in December of 14, and the leadership, both political and military, are aware of that, and there's more work to do, and it's work that really must be done in order for us to complete our mission. The quality assurance engineers that we have that are from Afghanistan go through a training program in an assessment of whether they're capable of doing the work that we need them to do. The other thing that we focus on with the Afghan QAs is locations where we cannot access without a significant amount of transportation or security. And then we're able to use everything from our systems that are able to fly over projects, the photographs of the projects, and key detail information on the projects that the QAs must provide to us to make our assessment of the performance of the projects. In some cases, in order to ensure that the QAs have the kind of training and have the experience that we need, we will go out with the QA. And once a level of confidence is built that that particular QA understands the requirements, is competent in their duties, then they can operate independently. But for the most part, they will operate independently in assessing these projects once we've validated them as a QA that's on our team.
Lieutenant General Thomas Bostic is the commanding general of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. One more break, and we'll hear some more from his recent roundtable with a few of us media types at the Pentagon. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serban. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, I'm Jared Serbu. This is On DoD. Finishing out the program this week with a little bit more from Lieutenant General Thomas Bostic, the commanding general of the Army Corps of Engineers. What we're hearing is selections from a recent media roundtable he hosted at the Pentagon with me and a few other reporters. I'm repeating the questions as we go since most of them didn't make it on tape during the event. This next one has to do with the Corps' involvement in refurbishing harbors on the Gulf and Atlantic coasts in preparation for the widening of the Panama Canal.
We're heavily involved. The president in August of 2012 came out with a strategy called We Can't Wait. Part of that strategy, and one of the focus of the strategy, was to streamline the business processes within the federal government so that the interagency would come together to make sure that the work that had to be done, particularly on ports, could move rapidly. There were a number of ports that were named in the We Can't Wait strategy: New York, New Jersey, Norfolk, Jacksonville, Charleston, and Miami. In addition to the We Can't Wait strategy, on top of that, ports like Miami did not want to wait at all. So their work, in order to prepare for the Panamax ships, which will... initially, they were going to be ready in 14. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. It's been delayed. But once those Panamax ships come through, then we're going to need 50 feet of dredge of depth for the ships to come through. So with our job in these areas, working with contractors and working with the states and the communities to to get the depth of these ports to the right level. Miami decided to go ahead and front the $130 million that it's going to cost, so we're already working on the port of Miami. In the other ports that I named, there is some work going on. For example, in New York, New Jersey, from Sandy, we are doing some of the work there in dredging. And in others, they're in different states of readiness for authorization and appropriation from the Congress in order to achieve the depths that we need for the post-Panamax. But this is very important for the country. There is a significant economic impact, both positive and negative, in terms of whether we're able to achieve the depths that we need. So we're working really hard within the interagency, working very hard with the states to do the work that needs to be done. There are a number of ports that are already prepared for this, mostly on the West Coast. But the folks in Texas are keenly aware of this, too, and they're working as a team to try to ensure that their ports will be ready. I don't have the status, but we can provide you some of the details on where those ports are. There's about 12,000 miles of inland waterways that the Corps has responsibility for, and the dredging of that. That being said, money is a significant challenge in our ability to dredge to meet those requirements.
Again, Lieutenant General Thomas Bostic, the commanding general of the Army Corps of Engineers, at a recent media roundtable. The next reporter question, as the Afghan war draws down, where does the Army Corps shift resources that were being used there?
I can't really say that the resources in Afghanistan will be diverted. Largely, you know, those resources are overseas contingency supplemental fundings that the Congress has authorized, so much of that will just not be authorized. What I will say is that we are involved in all of the combatant commands to one degree or another. As the nation has prioritized in the national security strategy and the national military strategy, the Pacific is a very important area that we are allocating our talent and our resources. We continue to stay heavily engaged in CENTCOM. Although we're doing most of our work in Afghanistan, we're in many other countries in the CENTCOM area of responsibility. And you being from CENTCOM, I'm sure you know the level of work that we're doing and, you know, whether it's in Qatar or Jordan or for the Saudis, I mean, we're heavily engaged in the work that we're doing in CENTCOM, and we will be for the foreseeable future. And that's not to say that we're not engaged in SOUTHCOM and AFRICOM, and we're working closely with NORTHCOM and SOCOM and all of the combatant commands, because each one of them, some have a higher degree of actual projects and dollars that are being pushed into those COCOMs. But in my discussions with some of the COCOMs, some of the most important work we do is with the relationships that we develop in those countries. And a lot of our relationships are built based on our water resource expertise, and less on what we can construct. Although we do very well at our construction mission, our water resource expertise is hugely significant. I've been asked to come in with my experts to speak at the UN on several of occasions. We operate across many continents with leaders asking for our leaders to come and engage on water resource issues. This weekend, one of our leaders was asked to come to 10 Downing Street on Sunday to talk about the floods that they are experiencing in England. So that sort of engagement. We're in Pakistan helping them with their concerns on floods. So we're in India and on and on. Brazil is going to build 10 dams in 10 years and is counting on the technical assistance of the Corps of Engineers. So while we may send two or three people, or sometimes just one, that relationship that we build gives great credibility, I think, for the Army and for the nation in terms of building stability in those countries and building trust in our country and what we can do to help them. So I know I've kind of gone all over the map here, but we're engaged in all the COCOMs.
That's Lieutenant General Thomas Bostic, the commanding general of the Army Corps of Engineers and the Army's chief of engineers. We've been hearing this hour some excerpts from a recent media roundtable he held at the Pentagon with myself and a few other reporters. If you missed any of the discussion, we'll post our entire show, as always, at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. That's going to do it for this week's episode of On DoD. Very glad you could join us. Please tune in again next week. I'm Jared Serbin. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.